My name is Kimberly Villafuerte Barzola. I'm interviewing on behalf of the Oral History Summer School 2026 on May 28th, 2026 for the Community Library of Voices and Sounds. I'm here today interviewing Tangu Badila, and we're in Tangu's art studio here in Hudson, New York. Tangu, may I ask you to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Tangu Badila. I am an artist, creative human, and I am currently residing in Hudson, and
So Tangu, can you tell me about a place that you would consider to be home?
Anywhere? Interesting. So I feel like I've moved multiple times in my lifetime already, like physically and like spiritually. And I guess like wherever my family is feels home to me, because we grew up so close-knit that whenever I'm far away from them, that's when I don't feel like, I feel like I'm just visiting or it's temporary. So I would say, I would consider Hudson a home for sure. I think I've been, like, I was born in Paris, and then we moved to Long Island, and then we moved to Hudson, and then I moved to back to the city, and I lived in multiple boroughs there. And then during COVID, I came back to Hudson with a whole new, like, perspective on this town that I grew up in between 12 and 20, with much appreciation for like all the access to nature and just food and clean air and just space and like peace. So for, I think currently I would say Hudson very much feels like a home, and most of my, a good amount of my siblings, a lot of us is 10 of us, so a lot of my siblings are still here and in here in the city. So I think like New York, I guess I would say New York as a state, I would consider home right now.
Can you tell me a bit about your family?
My family is a very special family to me. Like, I think a part of my mind wants to describe it from an outsider's perspective, because that happens a lot with how much I feel like we very much move as like one unit. So I think like there's such an impact, especially in a town as small, small like Hudson, and we're like a Congolese American family. There's a lot of impact that we've made in just living in our lives and like taking space in Hudson to create and share our culture and ourselves and our family and our love for each other. There's 10 children, just to paint like a visual. And we were raised by like artist parents, very free. My mom did go to school. She went to university. She got her bachelor's in science, and she did teach at universities when we were in Long Island. But in Hudson, they were predominantly self-employed artists. And raising 7 of the 10, my oldest sister, she stayed in Paris, and one of my brothers was in Cornell. He went to Atlanta. That was a whole love story there. And then my other brother was in New York, was in Queens, and stayed in Long Island, Queens. Like, he kind of stayed, like two of the siblings kind of stayed in one of the places we lived, and then one ran off on his love story. So we're in 7 children, self-employed parents. You know, it was very financially, you know, a roller coaster of financial security, but there was so much love and like artistic freedom to create that I think, like, there was so much capacity for being resourceful and taking as much opportunity as there was here. And my mom even started, like, writing plays and doing community theater to, like, keep us having activities and being active here and, you know, doing dance classes and workshops and, like, connecting with local organizations that had, you know, child-friendly programming so that we could also benefit from those things. And so, yeah, I think I would describe my family as just love beings that are super close and very creative and very much use the outlet of music and visual arts and dance, and then a, like, strong Congolese background. Our father didn't speak English. He didn't want to learn the language, so he kept us speaking French, and which also kept us pretty, like, grounded in, like, the separation of being too swept up in, like, the American culture and, like, you know, the just America period. I think there is something in this country that isn't that welcoming to culture in a sense. And I feel like even being in Hudson, which was, like, you know, there was, like, some racial tension here, especially coming from Long Island when we went to predominantly black schools. And then we come up here and then we have, like, one black teacher in the entire district. So there was a huge culture shock in that sense. And I think being that my father really kept us, like, protected with, like, having some boundary and restriction to just really conforming to, like, the culture of just non-cultural in a way. And, you know, at first, you know, because when we were in Long Island, there was, like, bullying and all that going on. And then coming up here, we were, like, kind of already anticipating that this would happen. But the opposite did, because there was such a, like, lack or, like, such a void of, like, cultural experience here in a way that when we came, it was, like, extremely welcomed and, like, just like a breath of fresh air to just have something interesting and different. And, like, you know, I feel like that really brought a lot of light and love to our family and a lot of opportunities. And to the point where now, like, years and years later, they're like, oh, you guys are a famous family here. And we're like, oh, like, it was never the intention to be that. But I think because it's so genuinely, like, consistently rooted in us to be this way, it just stays, like, it creates such a strong, like, identity, and, yeah, so, yeah, I think my family is very cool, obviously, and, you know, I definitely have had times in my lifetime, imagination is very strong, where I'm like, oh my God, like, how, like, dreams where I'm like, oh my God, like, I wasn't in this family, I was in this other family, and I was like, that was my real family. And, like, really, like, having these moments of, like, being outside of it and realizing how, like, special it is and how rare it is to be a family, how we are, even to our older ages as now, like, we're still, like, just as close and, like, very, you know, intimately in awareness of what each other's doing constantly in a way. So, so yeah, I would say, you know, my family is pretty cool and I'm very blessed to be a part, to have been born into this family with all of that it entails. Because it's not all rainbows. Like, I feel like even from the outside, a lot of times people are like, oh, your family is so beautiful and magical and you guys are all so talented and you guys are all so this, but everything in life has balance and there is the other side and the things that we, you know, the hardships that we have to deal with and go through because we're so strong in it together. We're able to, like, face most anything. Like, our father passed away in 2012 and that was a huge, like, it was a very huge, like, wound for us. But it, had we not had each other to, like, really experience it with, like, it would have been, like, impossible to overcome that kind of a loss, even though it's a transition. In my interpretation of people passing, is a transition, and he's very much present with me, even right now, in this experience I'm preparing. But physically, it was a huge wound, and I think because of the family that we are, we're able to overcome and overcome all that still has happened and happens within our unit. So it's balance, it's all of it. But because there's love and there's unity, it's very strong. So, yeah.
You mentioned being exposed to different types of cultural programming from a young age, mm-hmm. partially from your parents also being having their own artistic practices. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you could tell me about a memory you have, kind of engaging in whether it's a class or a program that you can remember.
So yeah, when I mentioned that, immediately I was thinking of TSL, which is Time Space Limited. It's in Hudson. I'm like, it's on this street. I don't think that matters. And Linda Musman and her wife Claudia at the time, we were like 11, 12 years old, my age. My brothers also experienced this. And they got funding, or they were able to sponsor local kids in community to go to a camp. And it was called Camp Turk. And when I was a child, I felt like it was so, so far away. But I think it was like in Ithaca or Utica somewhere. And it was such a beautiful camp. Like all the activities, and it was like vast. Like they had all these water programs where you could do like tubing, or you could do sailing, kayaking, canoeing. Like they had all these different activity access, which we never had access to, especially in Hudson. It wasn't really something happening like that here. And then they had like archery and like different sports, and just very like just like a lot of access to new first time experiences as far as like outdoors. And then they had a great meal program, they had great field trips, the counselors were amazing. A lot of them were from Australia for some reason, but that also made it feel like otherworldly. I didn't feel like we were like in New York anymore. And like we made friends from all over the place, because the camp like welcomed kids from everywhere. Like there was a girl there from like Florida and like from like California, Arizona. So we really were able to meet all these different people. And we went, I think I went to that camp two summers, maybe even three summers, and I think it was like for like a 3-week program, and it was such a like impactful experience in my childhood to have had that experience. And then my brothers also went through TSL, and they even like sponsored like us to get new clothes and like camping gear and things that we needed if we didn't have it. Which was super helpful to our parents. You know, they're raising all these children. They're like, we don't have the finances to afford camp, let alone all these things that you need. So they were, you know, taking care of all that. And yeah, it was a beautiful time. You know, made many friends that I still am in touch with. And yeah, it really, like, gave me the experience to say, like, yeah, I used to go to camp when I was a kid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it really allowed that to be something that was a part of my life that I do very much like cherish and still have memory of. So yeah, that was a great one.
Something else that you were mentioning earlier was, you know, being exposed to all these different types of creative practices and being in your studio right now. I'm curious if you can also share with me how your relationship to expressing yourself creatively has changed over time.
You're asking all the right questions because it's like the answers are going to be long. So I initially, and this also ties back into the upbringing, in middle school, high school, I was always into the arts. I was always creating and always like interested in whatever art programs they had. And in high school, I ended up doing photography and pottery and like the studio arts and all the different, every art program was available, I took it and did it. And then, but I always saw it as like, this is just during now. Like, I never saw it as like, I'm going to be an artist after, I'm going to go to art school, I'm going to do all these things. Even my art teacher at the time, Ms. Adams, she was like, oh, you have something special. Like, I really hope that you end up going and doing this. And then I was like, yeah. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to go to school for business because I need to have, I'm a Virgo, by the way. I was like, I need foundation, I need structure, I need stability. Like, I grew up with so much flux in that, like, department that I needed to feel like I need to find work that can really, like, sustain finances. So I just, like, business. And so I went to Columbia Green for 2 years, and I got an associate's in business. I did accounting, I did micro, macroeconomics, I did business law. Like, all those things were, like, absolutely nothing of interest to me. Like, all the maths, I was like, you know, just passing. And I was like, and even like the only class that like kind of I found interest with was marketing, because there's like some creative aspects there. And then I was like, yeah, but like, if I continue this business like degree, like marketing, like, do I really want to be like working for these businesses and making these people money with all these creative like concepts that I come up with? And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. So after I graduated, I was working both at the Spotty Dog and Swoon Kitchen Bar, the restaurant, and this like renovated firefighter house that's now like a bar, and then it's like a bookstore, and it's like an art supply. Like, they just put like all these slashes, and I thought that was always so cool growing up here, because there wasn't so much going on, and like mostly antique shops and things like that. As a young kid, I'm like, oh, that's boring, but that felt like such a cool place to be. And then they also were doing all these different programs there. So anyway, I was working at Swoon, and at first I was working as hostess waitress for like a couple weeks. It didn't last long, and then I was like, ah, there's too much cattiness, there's too much drama. Like, I'd rather work in the kitchen, because whenever I went back there to get the food, like, they're playing music, like, everybody looks like they're having a good time doing what they're doing, cooking. I was always into cooking anyway, so I didn't know this then, but I was like, mentioned it, and then the pastry chef was looking for someone, and she was like, oh, you don't want to work with them. And also, I was a vegetarian at the time, so it kind of like made sense for me to not go into savory. But she's like, oh, you should work with me, and we're making ice cream, and we're making, and she really intrigued me with all those things. So I was like, yeah, I like to bake. Yeah, like, let me try out pastry. And also, at the time, it was very much like just a work-related interest, but it's something that could be creative and cool. So I started training with her in the pastries and the desserts, and then like she trained me for like 2 weeks, and then she's like, all right, we're going to Puerto Rico. Her and her husband, Davis, left, and I was like, okay. And then so, but by doing that, it really made me like step up to really see like what I'm capable of. And then I was like, oh, I like this pressure, and I like the just being like fine-tuned in the details and like the creative aspect. And it's very artistic to do, you know, pastry arts. So then I worked with her for a year, and then I was like, I think I want to go to school for this. So then I ended up applying to, first I was going to go to, I forget the name, so let me just go straight to this. But it was between that school that I can't remember, and they were both in the city, and ICE, which is the Institute of Culinary Education in Chelsea. And I went to that school first, and I did the whole, not the interview, you like go and you do a visit and you do a tour, and then they have you eat in their student restaurant at the end of the night, complimentary to them. And then the food was very salty, the desserts were over-sweetened, and I was like, I think that's a sign that I shouldn't go here. And then the financial aid was very minimal, so I was like, I always told myself, I'm never going to go, I'm never going to do or try to go to school if I have to pay, like, out of pocket, or if I can't afford, if I have to go into, like, debt, debt gives me a lot of anxiety. I'm very uncomfortable with it. So I try to just always be on top of payments and things. So I was like, it has to be. So just so happened that ICE, they had a work study program, and you work like 1,600 hours in their like stewarding department, and then that pays for your tuition. So I did that for a year, and then the following year I started the classes, and then I did my program. But during the stewardship program, it really had like allowed me to have relationships with all of the professors. I knew the whole school, like the whole entire school. Also, I did like a lot of different things outside of the school with the chefs and like doing all these anyway, there were so many things that I got out of doing that, even though I had to do that and have a real job to pay to actually like have money, because this was just like we're paying for the schooling. So that was like a lot that year to just be working like full days, like two jobs, like working like a full day, like that job in the morning and the real job at night. And so yeah, I went to culinary school. I started working in the city in different restaurants and bakeries, and then I ended up at the Crosby Street Hotel in Soho, and I became the executive chef there. I think I was like 27, 28 years old. And it all like lined, it's like a long story, but like another one of like put me to the test, and then I ended up there for like 4 years doing that. And you know, a lot had transpired during those years, which was very beautiful and also very like telling of like where I need to pivot my career in life. And my dad had transitioned during that time, and so it really just like did a hard turn to like, you need to be artist in this way, like you're running away. Like I literally used to say that I'm like running away from being an artist. As I was like, oh, that's my father's passion, that's his dream, that's his life, like I'm never gonna be him, like he's just so like extraordinary, like I want to find my own light because that light is already shining. So I was always like avoiding, but it always was kind of like haunting me. And so when he passed, I feel like his spirit was very much like strongly like that you're not happy in this career, like it's so like it takes such a toll on the body. I never had like any time off. I was like all vacation, all like holiday. I had to work. I rarely saw my family, and you know, it just started to take all of the combination of all of those things started to take a toll. And even just the purpose of what I was doing, like I started being very health conscious and like sugar and like, you know, for like, you know, for a special occasion, okay, but like you're literally feeding people sugar every day. Like, is this really your purpose in life? Like, I don't think it is. So it really just helped me to just shift. And at first, because I was still in this, like, I need to make a career of it though. Like, I'm going to be coming from a career. Like, I have a vacation. I have, you know, insurance, all these things with this career that I like to just shift into like artist self-employment. Like I just didn't see that right away. So then I went to Hunter College to try to finish that degree. And I was like, I'm gonna go to school and finish my degree so I can teach art. And it's still like this, you know, sustainable thing, and I can control it, because that was still this very much a part of the story. And then and anyway, long story short, I did some semesters there, and then I took art history. That really shifted my perspective on going into art school in that way, going to school for art in that way. And my dad was self-taught, and I just found, like, I didn't want to lose my, like, freedom of, like, creating with my imagination 100% and then being, like curating my imagination through teaching. And I feel like me personally, a lot of artists that are trained have a very similar way of executing their art. And so I'm very happy that I didn't go that way completely, because I know the way my mind works with the way like tries to have right and wrong and control it would have kind of maybe been compromising like what I was the capacity of what my imagination could do. So long story short, I ended up this was the year that like so many things were happening at this job, and it was just all pushing me out. And I was like, you know what? I think I need to take this leap. And I saved up for a couple months, and I was like, gave my notice, and you know, it was a good departure. It was no drama, but I gave my notice, and then I left, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this self-employment thing. It's not necessarily how it works. Like, I ended up finding out that I need to have a creative and work balance to start. Like, the work has to sustain the creativity. Just so it's not, I learned long, like, this is years and years now learning that. Like, you have to have work that is just for work. And you don't let your creative practice be your form of income, because then it's compromised. And I did a lot of portrait work, because that's where the commissions were. And to the point where people were calling me a portrait artist, and I was like, no, you don't understand me. So anyway, I did many things to shift that. Like, I did an exhibition of like a series called Gemini Moon of multiple different styles. So then when the idea is, when people come in the show, they think it's a group showing and it's just me, just to really cut the, like, you're just one type of thing. And so that helped me to like kill that little rumor going around. But anyway, I found like the leadership program, which is a great program in the city, and it's very much like pretty much made for like this kind of lifestyle of artistry, where you can work at your capacity, like part-time or full-time, and they hire all these artists as facilitators to lead programs in inner city schools throughout the city, with whatever your form of artistry subject is. So I did a lot of art programs and workshops as a residency in these different schools. And so I landed on that. Like, that was the work that I landed on. And then I was able to, like, I was in a band with my sister. I still am. We have shows coming up, Lady Moon, The Eclipse. Working on an album right now. I guess I feel like just saying that. And so I was able to really, like really just explore all of these creative outlets, because I had this, like, very stable, consistent work that was sustaining and still creative, the bills and everything like that. And then to today, we finally got here. I am still painting and creating. I'm still doing the music. And then on the side, like, the work that I'm doing to sustain this is that I still am making, like, I consult and change and do menus with Swoon. I'm back there again, which is it's a family now because of how many years. And different restaurants, and I lead workshops at like different community programming at like the Hudson Hall and the Hudson Area Library, and like different organizations that reach out to have programming. So it's very much like super freelance. I finally became my parents, which is what I was kind of like avoiding to become, which I think just to know in life, anybody hearing this, is that your genes are always gonna be a part of your, like, becoming in some way, you know, and to run away from that is just run away from yourself, because it's just gonna get you, you know. So, and it's good, and then you actually start feeling like yourself, and I feel like I've felt the most, like, content, and, like, I feel like I'm the quality of my life is so high now that I'm accepting and just being welcoming of what I actually am, you know, so.
So you mentioned just now that you've done some educational work with Hudson Hall, which is maybe a different hat than some of the many hats you wear. So could you tell me a little bit about what it's like to work with other people you know, in their development of their creative practice?
As far as just in general?
Yeah.
I think it's very, it's great first. It's definitely eye-opening, and there's always opportunity to learn, because I think when I'm in my creative practice, it's very solitude, it's very isolated. And so when there is opportunity to collaborate or work with others, it's very refreshing to see, like, you know, there's always the mindset, the concept of, like, two heads are better than one, or those things, and it's very true. Like, I think a lot that I try to do or do on my own, when there's, like, another presence that's also, you know, contributing in this creative energy, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, and then it just gets very exciting, because it becomes less, like, work feeling. I'm trying to get the word, but it's not there. It feels less like work or less like a challenge, and more like something that we can, like, develop or create or, like, come up with the concept of. It kind of feels more like that. And the support, super supportive. Like, it just, that feels very great to feel supported and to feel like you're not doing it on your, like, you're trying to figure out all of these things on your own. And yeah, I think the Hudson Hall, you mentioned Hudson Hall. I feel like since being a child here, I remember the Hudson Hall very, like, profoundly in my memory, because it was a very beautiful space. It was always like, wow, like, you know, this is so, like, this is like the city. Like, it kind of felt like one of those buildings, because a lot of Hudson was still under development or boarded up. Like, Hudson Hall really withstood all of that time period and was sustaining as this place that, even though they've had renovations since that time, but even then, I still always felt like the Hudson Hall was, like, this, like, very pristine place. And even when I reached out, because I had an exhibition there in 2024, I reached out and said, oh, I always wanted to, when I was a kid, I always saw the exhibitions, and I was like, one day I'm going to have my art here, which, like, a part of me feels like, did I really say that? Because I wasn't trying to be an artist. So, but I think there was a part of me, maybe in my subconscious, that would just thought that that's, like, you're famous if you have your artwork at the Hudson Hall. Like, that's what I thought as a kid. And so it did feel like that, even as an adult, of reaching out to have a show there, like, and they said yes, even though they said I had to wait a year, which makes sense, because they don't just, you know, it doesn't work like that. But it also allowed the show to, like, expand and grow into this, like, huge experience that I didn't, you know, that's still working with collaboration. Like, I only saw, like, I'm going to have a space, a beautiful space to show the work. And then it's like, no, you're going to have a beautiful space. It's a multidisciplinary experience, because we're going to help you with this grant. And then you're going to have the funding to really, like, you know, explore all your dreams of how you would want this exhibition to be, had you had the funding, which is what happened. And I had, like, different wellness practitioners at the opening doing, like, acupuncture and massage and, like, trauma therapy healing, and I had medicinal herbs, a sound bath. My younger sister, like, while the show was up, a week later, did, like, a yoga session in the space with all the art. And then my band performed with, like, the projections of the artwork as, like, the background. Like, it was, like, so many things developed. I was able to collaborate with different local sculptors, Reggie Madison being one of them, and, you know, condolences, and he recently passed. And I was just so, like, grateful that there was so much space made for me to have these experiences and connections, and to be able to have had Reggie show his work in that show is just, it's like, that's such a, like, beautiful memory that I can have now. And because Hudson Hall made it, open its doors to make that space and to make that possible. So yeah, that my relationship with Hudson Hall is very deep in as far as, like, in my heart, where it goes, because I feel like of all the organizations that I've had experience with, like, the intention of what they're doing is so strong that it has been consistent from my, like, little children, 12-year-old days to, like, now I'm 39, and it's still, like, I still feel like I'm being taken care of, like, a little kid would be there getting taken care of by them, and then I'm teaching programs to little kids, so it's just such a full circle, and I think it's just a blessing and a privilege to Hudson as a town to have the Hudson Hall be like a center. Like I said once to them, I was like, Hudson Hall is like the heart of Hudson. Like it's like the center piece that really, like, if anybody came to Hudson off the train and like needed to like do like a 20-minute like summary of what Hudson means, like they can go to Hudson Hall and then they would get a sense, like a genuine sense to, in like, and it's like, you know, very hypothetical because it's like, who knows like what's going to be showing and what's going to be there, but somebody, like if somebody was there to speak about Hudson, maybe let them be there for like a week, but Hudson Hall really represents Hudson well to me as far as like what I think Hudson can be for the community. I think Hudson Hall really represents that perfectly. Yeah.
Something else you mentioned earlier was how your relationship with your siblings has remained quite strong,
mm-hmm.
despite moving and just life happening over the course of many years, and also that you collaborate now with one of your siblings doing music. And I'm curious if you could just share more about exploring that side of your creative practice.
Yeah, so my sister, Gonda Badila, and she's the moon, so my name is the sun, and she's the moon, and we're twins, and my dad is an artist, so he named us. And that was really nice. I love saying it because, like, everybody needs to know that. So she started her music life and career in Hudson, which was also, initiating and igniting, like, creative energy and flow in Hudson, which was a town that, like, it needed all the sparks of, like, creative energy. And once they were lit, like, everything, like, came to, like, moths. Like, they came to that light, that creative energy. So she, you know, there used to be a little music venue called Jason's Upstairs that's, like, right next to the second show on 5th and Warren area right there. And they used to do open mics, so then she started doing open mics, and that's kind of how she started her music career. And then even to the point where Michelle Diego Cello, that has a house in Hudson now, she became good friends with the family because we're in Hudson. Like, everybody's like, oh, you need to get to know the Badil family. So that was a benefit for us because then we got to have a relationship with her. That's, like, amazing, and we still do. And so she, like, ended up, like, playing bass for her, one of her open mics, and, like, helped her with her sound, and it just became very much, like, mentor-sister energy, and just really, and then she just started to really, like, build the confidence of, like, performing, and then she started collaborating with, like, there was, like, a big music scene happening in Hudson then. They even used to have an arts walk, which was amazing. I wish that it was still happening now that I'm, like, doing art. And there were, like, artists all over Warren Street, live painting and selling their work, and, like, craftsmen. And just like how they have the Winter Walk, they used to have the Arts Walk. And then we were, like, kids doing, like, $1 portraits next to, like, Mexican Radio to, like, get our Halloween costume money. So that was great. And so in that time period, she really started collaborating with a lot. There was, like, a lot of artists. It was a very artsy town. It was, like, kind of what Catskill is now. Like, Catskill is getting the artsy vibe, and Hudson is getting the, like, uppity, bougie New York City vibe for some reason. And so she, yeah, she was collaborating with all these musicians and bands and artists, and everyone was playing and doing shows, and there was like music everywhere, and she was collaborating with like so many of the musicians here. And then the culinary school, and then I was like, oh, like how do I get her to like come to the city with the music, because I was such a big fan of hers. At the time, I was doing music at all. I was like, that's her thing. I was very much like, that's everybody else's thing. I had to evolve to like everything can be for everyone. So there was this janitor, like he was like in charge of like the custodial, like janitorial department, named Tito, and he's from Panama, and he's like maybe in his like late 50s or something, maybe early 50s, sorry, I don't know if he's gonna hear this. And he set up this whole like studio music space in like one of the like basement rooms. And like one day he was like always so like, oh hey, how are you, how's it going, like do you sing, are you a singer? And I've been asked this before, maybe because my voice is low, I don't know. And I was like, no, but my sister sings, and she's this, and she's that, and you should be her. And I was like trying to get her to do, like, if you're in the city doing music, oh, you made it. Kind of like, that was like the mindset that I had. And so she started doing music with him, and he had her singing all these like Spanish love songs. And like the band was like all these older like Latin men. And there was this one woman that also was singing from time to time with her. So then she ended up in the city doing that, but then I think that like planted the seed of like, oh, like I can like expand. And then so then she, I was living in the city already now like two, three years, and she ended up moving to the city. And then I was like in like my dad passed away. I was like in a sad return transition of many things. Like that's when I was leaving the job, leaving that 7-year relationship, leaving this apartment. Like it was just so much change. And she was like, you need to, after the like, really what's gonna answer this question is like after the breakup, she was like, you need to be in the band, you need to do different things with your life, like, you know, like you're doing the culinary arts, but like you're like, I could feel that you're not like happy, like you're not satisfied with like how you're expressing yourself, like why don't you try to join the band? And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not a singer. Like, I'm not, that's your thing. She's like, you should try. Like, don't ever, you know, because we always grew up singing in, like, our Congolese dance and drum company that our parents had. And, like, my father was the co-founder of the National Ballet of the Congo after they got their independence. And so, you know, it was a big deal. Like, he would tour all over Europe and, like, in so many different countries that he always would list to us, and I should know this by now, but I don't. But I knew he was in like Germany and Portugal and China and all these places touring the dance and drum company. And then when they came to the U.S., they started their own iteration in Long Island. And then when they came up here, they were still doing it, but there was less like access to like opportunities because of Hudson, and you know. They weren't cell phones and things like that back then, yellow pages, so they didn't really, it was like very much word of mouth contact to get gigs and things, which we did get, but it wasn't as like frequent. So anyway, we did sing in that, in the dance company, so she was kind of holding on to that, like, yeah, you can sing, you did do it. I was like, so then I was like, yeah, why not? And I was very much in a space of like trying to like regain my identity. I feel like in the relationship I lost so much of myself, where I was trying so much to be what that relationship needed, that I didn't feed my own interests. And so I was like, yeah, I need to just be a reborn. I'm having a rebirth, which it very much felt like. Even my dad's passing was like a rebirth to me. Like it was like this like sacrificial exchange of like a life for a life kind of situation. And I did have a rebirth in my life, and I would have never been even creating. So anyway, I ended up starting singing in the band, and in 2013, I think, and you know, we were doing all these shows all over, like Lower East Side and like Brooklyn and like wherever we could get opportunities to perform, we're performing everywhere. And then the more the years went by, the more, like, exclusive, we were like, ah, we only want to do these shows. We want to do a quote musical. We want to do this place. And, but we were doing, like, two rehearsals a week, doing shows every weekend, touring, band retreats. Like, it was, like, a full, like, it was, like, a full throttle, active band situation. And not even a situation. It was a band. It was serious. And she took it very seriously. And I committed to that, but then I also was, like, in that practice, realizing, like, you have to have space, because then when are you creating in this avenue? And so, and I still did, like, I was able to, I had a solo show in 2017 in Brooklyn, and, but even, and then I had another one, Hudson, the Gemini Moon in 2018, and then 2024, so then COVID kind of shifted a lot of things. In 2024, I had another show, and this last show that I had really showed me my potential of, like, when I completely devote myself 100% to this avenue of creating, this is what you can create. So even with having love and being a part of Living with Eclipse, you know, like, just keep that in mind. But during that time period, she moved to California for 4 or 4.5 years. So that also gave me the space to really be with myself. And now that the band has, like, come back, they've had children. Some members of the band have had children, have had marriages. So, you know, that also has shifted the way at which we were, like, moving. Like, then we were, like, oh, in our late 20s, young, running around, just like, yeah, we're available for everything, yeah. And now it's like you really got to, like, schedule things, like, 6 months in advance for people to be available, you know. So that really helps to, like, balance, like, you know, keeping space for everything that I'm, since I want to do so many things, it's like, that keeps it balanced. But yeah, I think that answers the music question. I'm giving the long answers today, so I just decided.
Yeah, you just spoke about how pace changes over time. And I also remember you talking about part of your transition from more the culinary work and kind of how you viewed, like, sugar as the basis of a lot of that work as being something that maybe your thoughts on it shifted over time, if I understood correctly. And so I'm wondering now how you relate to, like, the pace of work and your own wellness.
So the pace of culinary work, or just period?
Or the pace of your work now.
Okay. Yes, that's a good question, because I feel like I'm in a completely different reality of work-life balance, and in a completely different capacity and, like, willingness. Because then I was working, like, I've, like, starting out, like, working, like, a full day to cover work and, like, school and then work, and then working in it as a career, like, doing sometimes 12, 14-hour days for months, because, like, I would have to hire and rehire people, and thinking that I was normal. And then, like, I even to the point where, like, I was, like, referred to, like, get foot surgery because, like, I was standing on my feet so long, and I inherited, like, bunions that is, like, this is, you're going to need surgery if you're going to stand on your feet this long. So, you know, like, different, even, like, those kind of, like, health things coming up, had to put life into perspective of what I was, like, accepting as, like, the standard of which you should be, like, working your body. And I was always, like, prideful, and, like, I push myself to the limit, and I'm, like, a beast, and I just work, and I do it, and it's, like, even, like, the only times I ever took off, which there was a lot of, like, time off you could take, was, like, when my dad passed away and when my grandmother passed away. Like, it's the only times that I, like, called out of work, like, ever. And I was, like, yeah, that's not, I don't think that's healthy, I don't think that's normal, but it really took me separating myself from that to realize like how much I was doing, and it didn't just happen like by choice or by will. It was like moving, so when I did transition to being more freelance and like working with leadership program, that kind of like initiated the beginnings of like having work at your own discretion or like your own desire, because I made my own schedule. Like I could pick and like I could commit to a residency of 2 days a week, and then I could like sub for like the other 3 days if I wanted to. Some weeks I would do more, some weeks less, or commit to like two residencies and then do subbing throughout. So there was a lot of flexibility in that schedule. And then I didn't have to work. It was like a lot of after school program timelines. So like I really could like have a show the night before and sleep in and still go to work and feel like I slept enough. You know, I was taking care of my body and myself. So I think having that kind of work for the many years, I think it was like 4 or 5 years I did that, really shifted my perspective on like work smart, not hard. Like I feel like I was always being told that from people. And I didn't understand what that meant. I was like, I am a smart worker. Like, look how much I'm getting done, you know? But it's like, no, you're not getting it. And then once that happened, I was like, oh. So I think ever since that, like, I really, like, adapted to that way of being, which I felt so much healthier, that there was no way that I would be able to go back to, like, the 9 to 5, the 9 to 8, the 9 to 9 schedule ever again. And I haven't, actually. And so from that, then COVID happening and then moving to Hudson, and then I'm living in my, like, family home that's, like, owned. So, you know, the bills of that, like, the maintenance of finance for that is very, like, small, that it's, like, you know, it really gives so much ease when, like, the housing security is there, because then you can choose how much you want to work and, you know, how much you want to do anything in a way. And so now that I'm in this position, like, I'm able to afford a studio space, I'm able to work and freelance as much as I want to or need to, and have, like, so much space and time for creating, which is such a privilege and a blessing to me. Like, I feel like this is something that I maybe 10 years ago would have never been able to even conceive as a thought that's possible. Especially because I was living in the city. Like, I don't think I was ever going to think that I would have this life then. And so, yeah, now I work, you know, at my own pace and at my own, like, desire and will. Like, I feel like sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe let's just do like 2 more days to do a little bit more saving so we could do some trips. And I do, you know, here and there, like, I'll like up the amount of work days per week so that I can save to do certain things. But it's still so flexible for me that, and I've made the work very flexible, so whatever I'm like committing to is like for like a 3 month span or like 4 month span, or it's just completely like freelance where it's like for catering or for like a wedding party or for like events or like changing a menu seasonally. So for like 1 week out of like 4 months, like 4 months, I'll like do this work, you know? So it's like very much a pace that feels normal and healthy and good for me right now. It does take structure and discipline, and so, you know, there is still like effort to be made in creating your own schedule, because you have to have the discipline to do that and to like remember all these dates and commitments that you're making, and find the different work that is in that avenue of flexibility. So, but it's working for me, and the more that I lean into that way of working and being, the more of those specific kind of opportunities are coming to me. So, because I recently, my little sister had a baby last January, and that February I was like, okay, like, I'm leaving this restaurant job because I was doing it like 2-3 days a week for a couple months. And I was like, all right, when she has a baby, I'm going to go do postpartum and then I'm not going back. And I keep trying to like leave this soon le perish, like this family job that I've had since I was like 17. For so many years now, because I'm like, I don't want to do pastry arts anymore. I want to do full arts. But I think it's all of it is, I can do them all together. Like, I always try to, like, one or the other, but I think they all want to have a life in to some aspect. But since then, I told myself, like, I don't want this to be the predominant, like, work avenue for me. But then I had to, like, answer the question of, like, so what kind of work would you be interested in? And I very much communicate with the universe and life and law of attraction. And I'm like, okay, like, I liked when I was doing the leadership program and I was teaching, working with the kids. Like, that was very fulfilling to be giving back and working with youth. And so those are the kind of opportunities that just started coming up. Like, just like Hudson Hall reached out on email. I'm like, oh, wow, like, very quick, and then the library, and then like Kaisness, and then all these people, and then I had to like have some boundaries because I was like, I don't want to have five days a week job now with all these opportunities, but then I still can have the option to choose because yeah, so yeah, that's how I'm working now. It's great, and I don't think I don't know if it's for everyone, but I think it's a very healthy way to do the work-life balance. Yeah.
You mentioned that there have been times when you've given back to yourself more time that have allowed you to explore your creative practice in a different way. And I'm wondering if you could tell me about a work or a concept that you created that you're proud of.
Yep. All the questions are like exactly like, like as soon as you ask the question, the answer is like. So you're just asking good questions and you get long answers. So yeah, this last body of work, I would say definitely is the closest to my heart so far. I mean, this what I'm working on now is very exciting, but that one was tied to so much. It was titled Eternal Life, and it was a body of work of 20 pieces that were subject to like the inner body systems and just like reimagined in a very like romantic, abstract, honoring way. And the show came out of grief because I just, you know, was excited. I just got a studio space, and then my sister, my twin, she was pregnant with her first child, and she had a premature, and then it went to a NICU experience for 3 months, and like, you know, being in communication for that, and then going down there to be in support of that, and then they were able to get her home, but there were still complications, and then she soon after transitioned, so that was like a very intense time period, and then going back down to be with them, and they're grieving, and then come back to the studio that I just bought, that I just like got, and I'm like, all the momentum and excitement and all the energy of that was just like, I don't know what to do with myself, like I don't know what I'm feeling, I'm just numb or I'm trying to be numb because I'm like, this is so intense. But in that time of being in the NICU, like I was like being made aware to how much I was disconnected from my internal body. Like they were like speaking to all these like developments that the baby didn't have, like brain function, just as because she did the sucking, swallowing. And, like, you know, talking about the lungs, talking about all these different parts of the body. And I was just like, huh, like, I didn't know that. So when I came back, like, did, like, that a part of what was helping me to, like, understand and, like, accept her transition was just researching so much of, like, the body and, like, what it takes to become. And it takes so much, you know, like, it's not, like, a by chance thing to be alive. And so it put me in a state of just, like, awe and, like, admiration if you're like, wow, like it's like amazing. This is like a phenomenal thing. Like how are we just walking around in these like phenomenal beings that we've been made so perfectly and just eating anything and just drinking and smoking and doing all these things, like just abusing this inner body. And I'm like, you know, maybe we just need to like see it in this beautiful way, because it also is challenging this narrative of like violence to the body. And like when I grew up, like I was always disgusted by the inner body because it was always guts and bleeding and just like it just looked so gross to me that it took me and my sister being pregnant to even watch like a birthing so I could be prepared because she was gonna have a home birth, so like not pass out. So it just was showing, all this experience was showing me how disconnected I was to the inner body. And even during COVID, how it was making everyone go in introspecting, and like to be quarantining and to be isolated, just really made everyone have to go inward. So it just continued that theme for me to keep going inward. And so then I was able to start picking myself up from that, the grieving of it, and having the studio, it just led for the show to become that. You know, and I dedicated the show to Kimora, my niece, because she gave me so much inspiration and so much, like even when my dad transitioned, I definitely was in a state of numbing that I didn't realize for so many years. And when she transitioned, like, it really just, like, completely just ripped open all the calcifying, all the numbing, all the ice, everything that I had surrounding my heart to like protect it from feeling hard feelings, like it was just destroyed. And it was just so intense, and like Pisces season was like extremely intense for me that year, because I was like, oh my god, that's what that feels like, oh my god, wait. Like I just really felt like it was extreme for me emotionally to like feel all these things. But putting that into the art made the art what it became. And even for me, when it usually takes me like a year to look at the art and like see it see it with admiration, like, and wow, like I feel like before that time period I'm like, oh, I could have did this, oh, I should have, you know, it's like always like nitpicking and criticizing. But I was able to in real time like experience the work and be like, wow, I don't know how I did this. I definitely be channeling and working with spirits. I trust and believe that. But that really supported my grieving in a beautiful way. And when the show went up, and then I had all the, you know, practitioners come and support the message of like really caring for and working to honor and respect and admire your inner body. It was just a very powerful message, and I think something that can resonate with anyone. Like, it didn't have to be subject to, like, a specific thing. Like, everyone is a human. I mean, everyone that went to the experience was a human being that has, like, the same system. So it could relate to anyone in any way, in any form, in any place that they're in life. And I feel like it really resonated with everyone, particularly in such a powerful way, that they really, like, the feedback that I was getting from it was like, wow, like, yeah, this, that's why it became as big as it did, because it was bigger than my intention. And so, yeah, I would say that show is a very powerful creation that I still am, like, in appreciation and admiration for, that I was even able to, like, create that, because it did take a lot of isolation and just, you know, just processing and releasing grief to create, you know.
I'm wondering if you could share now, as you mentioned, this is a more recent work that mm-hmm. you were reflecting on just now. What excites you looking forward?
So what excites me is like what my imagination uncontrolled, because I have been controlling it a little bit. Especially if I, you know, going into the avenue of art, into commission, into portrait work, it starts to control, like, your outcome and your reference painting and all that. And so I've been, since then, trying to remove that like, title, and the journey of removing that has come to this point, and even creating Eternal Life was, like, the birth of me, like, really leaning on my imagination and intuition in creating and not leaning so much on reference. I did do some referencing because I wanted the certain systems to be, you know, identified to some, you know, I wanted to honor them as what they are, but then I embellished them and did my abstractions to them. But now, like, this work is going more, it's leading more in the direction of, like, release, like, control of feeling like you need to be understood, because reference is a form of trying to be understood through your art by people being able to identify what you're doing. And there's a lot of freedom and self-trust in just, like, I want to create this, and it doesn't have to be identifiable. I'm like, in the beginnings, I feel like, of that journey. I did do a commission recently for the pocketbook, which is a reincarnation or a remake of one of my father's pieces, which put me in this whole other path of just, I met with this woman. She's like a priest, like, woman in New Jersey, and her name was Karma, and she ended up, like, affirming me all these things about what I'm doing and how, like, because I was telling her about my whole story, you know, I like to talk. And she was like, oh, you're saying how you ran away from being an artist because you never could be like your father, but, like, you're literally painting his work. Like, he's, like, initiating you through this path of, like, you know, through him, you're, like, becoming this thing. He's, like, mentoring you. And I was like, oh. So because of that piece, it did lead me, like, the work is always leading me. Like, something will lead me to this. And it led me to, like, dive into some of his older works that was where that piece came from, to, like, reimagine, to also connect with him and also, like, be mentored by his way, his stroke and his way of creating in that way, which is, some of these pieces have that, like this one and that one. And then also, like, making space for, like, what comes out of me working with him in a collaborative way, not just, like, referencing again, you know? So that's happening. And because I was in the space of, like, all right, like, what is my signature? Like, that, like, people are going to identify me as artist just when I do this. And then, like, there's also something there of, like, stop trying to, like, conform to, like, what art is supposed to represent itself as a category in life. And because you're so, like, uninterested in the validation of these establishments, so, like, why are you going into, like, the narrative of what they're creating? So I feel like I'm very excited about what is going to come out of me just being devoted to and honoring my imagination and letting more freedom and more trust and less control dictate what comes out of me creatively. So I'm very excited about that. It's happening now. Like, I can feel it happening now. I think, like, because of the nature, there's still some, like, it was like, I need some type of, like, container, but I still want to be wild and free, but I just need, like, so that's why, like, even this show titling, like, Painting Dreams, like, that could be anything. But it didn't, like, I feel like I still am, like, kind of like on a training wheels, I guess, maybe. And then, like, but free riding, no hands, not even eyes open. Like, that's like the excitement of, like, I can see in my future life. And I think it just takes that journey to get there. Like, I've, like, you know, watched so many documentaries on artists and all these artists that are these big house name artists, and they all had the journey of becoming their pure self by just going through all of the experiences that led them to feel like this is how they need to create. So I know that this is the journey, and I feel like there was a part of me that was like kind of trying to like artificially like bypass it and just be like, oh, I just need to, if I could figure out this style. And it's like, I don't know if I'm really that kind of artist. Like, I think I very much like to be inspired by what I'm experiencing, and then that'll create whatever body of work or series. And then it's like, okay, like, what's next? Like, I don't, yeah. And then I also was like, you know, there is a style that does want to hang out with me all the time, so I feel like they can live at the, I'm very much also learning that everything can live together, and it doesn't have to be like this signature style and nothing else, or like I could do these series the rest of my life and I'm never gonna have a signature style. It's like everything can have be living together. This is like the whole ecosystem of like, look at nature, it all lives together. Like, you can be natural too. So I'm just excited that I'm on this journey to begin with, and I think the place that I'm in on this journey happens to be a very exciting place right now. And you know, it's coming out of painting and doing a body of work that was stemmed from grief, to like doing a body of work that's like just like excited and just free and happy and like just being inspired by like everything that I'm experiencing and seeing, and like, oh, okay, I wanna, oh, this color combination is beautiful. Oh, this. So it's just like so much like excitement and energy and release, and like everything is so attractive and beautiful, and I'm like, there's just so many ideas that it's like so much is wanting to come out, and I think that's just exciting to me that there's so much there that wants to be released through me, and I'm also excited to release. So I think that's the very exciting part.
I wanted to ask, as a part of this record that we're creating, that you're narrating about your life, if there's something that I haven't asked you that you'd like to share?
I feel like you asked my whole life. Like, I you didn't ask about relationship stuff, which I'm glad you didn't, because there's not much in that regard at the moment. But I think, you know, I do feel like energy is feeling like something is coming into the picture soon, but I think you asked very like current and even past. I think you very much covered like what I would have wanted to be archived as. Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. As I close out, I'm wondering what your hope for Hudson is in the future, in the next 10 years, however you want to think about that temporally.
I think Hudson is such a potent seed for anything. And I think, like, even coming back and, like, going to, like, Dia de los Muertos celebrations and, like, the Bengali festival and the Latinx and the Black Fest, and like there's so much like openness to cultural experiences and to difference, like community wise. Like, I think that there's like a misconception because of how Warren Street is made and is seeming, that there's like it's very exclusive and it has this very like high end. It's, you know, it's not for everyone type of experience. But what because of the people, the community that is here, and what gets celebrated and who shows up, I see that it's like way beyond this like persona that is seeming to be. And I wish for Hudson to just remove, like, I don't want to say remove the mask, because I think that what's happening on Warren Street is a lot of people, transplants and different people coming and seeing the potential of Hudson in their perspective, which is not wrong, but I think that there's such a potent history and community of Hudson that's here that can amplify the experience in such a creative way rather than such a like aesthetically pleasing kind of way. And I wish for Hudson to reignite the artsy, creative music and like all of those kind of like the cultural experiences, and just really let itself be the home for that, because it has so much potential. Like one of the students from not my grade, but like maybe two grades under me, he was like him and his partner were titled Prom King Queen, which was such a like, it was like in the newspapers because it was like the first time in like, I don't even know the country or that happened. And it's like, and it happened in Hudson. Like, you know, this like this little town, like you just kind of see it as like this little thing, but it's such a hub for like magical things that could be first time things that can, like, I see Hudson being a place where it's like this utopian experience that can be the seed for like all these bigger cities and countries to see, like, look, like this incubated area created this like idea for like having an optimal, beautiful life, and like we can adopt this. Like, all we need is like they did it like this, they have these things, this is like the example, and then let's like amplify in like these larger cities and spaces. And I really, really see Hudson like that. Like, I think that it does it already, but I think with, like, support, it could really be, like, the place that is that place. And, like, the fact that so many people have, since COVID, from the city, from everywhere, moved to Hudson, of all places. Like, it was never a known place. Like, I think even when I lived in the city, I was like, yeah, I'm from Hudson. Like, Hudson Valley? What is that? I don't know. Like, nobody ever knew. And I was like, it's 30 minutes south of Albany, 40 minutes south of Albany, the state capital. You should know that. Like, I was always trying to reference it to something attached to it because nobody knew what Hudson was. And now everybody knows what Hudson is. So I had this mixed feeling of, like, this was our sacred. It was so beautiful and nice. And now these people are coming and taking over, and it's not the same. That was my old mind. But now my mind is like, this could be good. But it has to be honored for what it truly is and wants to be, rather than what people, their external perspectives of where they're coming from, want to turn it into. And I think that's probably the tension that maybe felt with what's happening in Hudson now, because as a land, not even as a peoples and structures and buildings, just as the land, is the land of Hudson is this, like, when I think of it, I see, like, this, like, golden light. Like, it's just this little potent seed that can really grow anything that you plant in it. And if you're going to plant bad things, or, like, you're going to plant displacement and all these things, like, then that's, it's going to grow that. It's going to amplify that. But if you're going to grow culture and art and community and all these beautiful things that I feel like the world can see as a great example of, then that's what's going to amplify and grow. And I just pray that it goes into that direction. Like, after, like, they had their fun and they saw what they could make and build here, and then they get bored of that, then it's like, oh, you guys used to do that? Oh, you guys used to do bed racing? You guys used to do... Because they even did a Mad Hatter parade. Like, they're just so open to everyone expressing themselves. And everyone can feel like they're important, or what their voice and their creativity and what they want to offer to the world is being acknowledged. Because Hudson is a small town, but it also... It's like a small town with a huge heart or something. Like, it really can be so much, even though it seemed to be so small. And there's access to it from everywhere, you know, because of Amtrak and all these things. So I think it's a very mad, like, I used to not give Hudson this much, like, appreciation and love. Like, I used to be like, oh, Hudson's boring, Hudson this, da, 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 da. But then coming back, I actually have reestablished a way more appreciative relationship with Hudson and even the surrounding, like, the farms and all the water holes and the waterfalls and, like, just so such a beautiful land. And, yeah, it has the potential to do even more of that magical work for life. And I think that's what I wish, and I think that's what's going to happen anyway, because I feel like that's what it wants to, like nurture. And even though I said the seeds can plant displacement, they can plant bad things too, but it actually doesn't want to plant. It doesn't want to nurture the things that it doesn't want to nurture. So it will like tolerate, you know, just like weeds and all those things are tolerable. But what it actually will like nourish is the things that are community and like creatively and artistically like foundational. Yes, I really think that.
Thank you so much for sharing with me today. One last thing I would love to ask. So you introduced yourself at the beginning of the interview, and I'm wondering if you could do what I'll call an outro.
Okay.
So just reintroducing yourself as we close out.
Okay. So my name is Tango Badila again, and thank you so much for listening to my life's long version. And I hope that from listening you enjoyed, and if anything you were inspired or took something that made you happy or smile or think from this conversation.
Thank you.
Yep.